You're listening to STP Radio. Hello, STP Radio listeners. This is your host, Mark Tomlinson. Welcome you again to another edition of STP Radio, where we get to talk to interesting, creative, unique, and intriguing people in the software test professionals community. Today, joining me is Paul Grizzoffi, who's going to be doing some upcoming presentations, sessions at the STPCon in San Diego. Paul, welcome to STP Radio.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Now, usually we would dive right in with a bunch of questions about, you know, the sessions and stuff, and we'll get to that. But mostly I'd love to just introduce you to the greater software test professionals community. You're a member of the Customer Advisory Board, but maybe you can share a little bit more about how you got started and how you've come to work with STP.
Sure. Currently, I'm the program architect and manager for MedAssets for Automation. MedAssets is a healthcare performance improvement company where what we strive for is helping hospitals increase their revenue or decrease their spend, mm-hmm. and just making the cost of healthcare be just more affordable for everyone.
Cool. You're not part of the Affordable Care Act. You're independently making things more affordable.
That is correct. That's right. We were from before the Affordable Care Act. We're the Affordable Hospital Act. There you go.
That's right. Exactly.
So lately, I've been calling myself the software pediatrician. And the reason I've settled on that is I believe most of us in the testing world have heard the old adage that the software developers birth the baby and the testers come in and say, your baby's ugly. But I prefer that I prefer the take on it that we're the pediatricians, we're those guys that come in and help that baby software, that new software, grow up to be strong and healthy.
Strong and healthy, that's right. And it has a weird shaped head, but don't worry about it, they'll grow out of it.
Yes, or you put the helmet on.
Okay, cool.
We actually have very young twins, and we were very careful to make sure that we flipped them over, sort of like a pancake, to make sure that they didn't lay on one side of their head too often so that we wouldn't have to put that helmet on them.
Yes, which you could do the same thing with software. That'd be like doing negative testing.
Exactly.
At the same
exactly.
time you're testing things. So in terms of test automation, which is also kind of the whole basis of the company, is sort of automating things to make them more efficient, more cost effective, and actually more prudent. How did you get into test automation, or did you kind of start
there? I actually did start there. My first job out of grad school was with a company called Nortel, Northern Telecom, Bell Northern Research. It was a telecom company, and I spent 16 years there. I started out as an automation developer quite by chance. They were looking for a C++ developer that had some parsing theory background, and I fit the bill. And I liked the culture. I liked the company. So I moved to Dallas and started working there. Might even still be there had the company not filed for bankruptcy.
Sure.
Yeah.
It happens, you know.
And what we did was we developed a multi-telephony protocol automation platform to aid in the testing of all the telecom products that we had. We had some proprietary protocols, so obviously we had to develop those in-house. But there were we were on the bleeding edge of everything, the same way the other telecom companies were. So while the standards were new and the products were being developed, we had to develop the tools at the same time. The tool vendors, we were all just building at the same time. So we built the stuff in-house and our guys used it to test the products.
Yeah. So it's you really, in terms of being a pediatrician, I mean, you started your career in testing with it not divorced from automation. It wasn't an afterthought or some new fad that you had to work fingle. You jumped right in.
Correct. In fact, I wasn't even a tester. We had it already back in 93. We had an established automation department where the team was responsible for providing tools and platforms and frameworks and infrastructure so that the testers, the teams that did have people that knew how to test, could use our stuff to make themselves more efficient or more effective.
Now, you might get some criticism from people that say, you know, there's people that know how to automate aren't the people that know how to sort of design and invent, you know, testing with all of the sort of the right algorithms or the right approaches. Or is that something that you find you get criticized, or to be an good automated tester, you should adopt good testing as well?
Your statements, I think, are spot on. My teams generally have not been testers. We are skilled at development. And what we do is instead of developing a product that we're going to sell to the public, we develop a product to help our testers do their job better. And if that means we can get to more specifics later on, but if that means we're going to develop something that they can write scripting test cases in, you know, hey, I've got this scenario that I want to make sure works every time. I want to run it 50 times a day. Then we will provide that, and we will help them write the actual scripts for that. Yeah. Or if it's, hey, we need this sort of one-off thing that we're going to need to help us do this data center migration, then we create that as well. Yeah. We're very test-centric. We're very we're very much built to help these guys just be more effective and more efficient at their job, because they're the testers. We're not.
Yeah, you could say that they are your customer. So just like a good product owner or a developer would say, my customer is an end user and what I build helps them. Your test designers or exploratory testers or whatever kind of validation or checking that they're going to do, they're your customer. So obviously everything you're focused on, you become focused on those testing practices and how to better automate them and assist.
Exactly.
Now, obviously we have STPCon coming up, and part of the impetus for having you on the show is to talk a little bit about this great session, the session title, which is Not Your Parents' Automation, a practical application of non-traditional automation. It made me think of the old Oldsmobile commercial. This is not your dad's Oldsmobile. So how did you come to this title?
Basically, based off that type of idea, is that what we're going to talk about in this session is a different approach to automation. It's not what most people have traditionally thought of as test automation. Too often in automation, I think we start thinking about, hey, I have all these regression test cases and all this, quote, manual test case stuff that I need to buy this tool, I need to get this tool, I need to write these scripts, and then it's all automated, or something along those lines. The discussion seldom really focuses on what's the value that technology can provide to testers. Don't get me wrong, is that because I think there is value in taking these keyboard typing type of test cases and applying technology to them so that the humans don't have to do that typing anymore. Right. But that may not be where technology provides the biggest value. Mm-hmm. Automation really is a means to an end and not an end upon itself. And really the end is helping testers do their job.
Right.
So my session itself explores an alternate non-traditional approach to automation that I call Automation Assist. And what we do is we focus on value and results as opposed to just test cases. And it sometimes will focus this by off-label tool use. Sometimes we write new stuff. And then sometimes we can use tools that aren't traditionally used for automation to help us do our automation job.
Sure. Give me an example of that.
I don't want to give too many things away.
Oh, no. Just one.
But I'll tell you that the command line is your friend.
Oh, sure. Like Windows PowerShell.
Windows PowerShell, command prompt. If you're in the Windows, or I'm sorry, if you're in the Linux or the Mac world, you've got the different command prompts there, like Bash and different things there. And there are built-in commands there that can help you do certain types of file and text processing that you really don't need to be a programmer for to be able to use this stuff.
In your I talked with Richard Bradshaw on a show before about automation, and it went back and forth about, you know, do you need to be able to write code? Do you need to be a programmer to be an automated tester? There's no right answer. There's different opinions. What's your opinion of that as you witness yourself and maybe others on your team that are getting into this?
My opinion is that, and I think I'm stealing this term from Richard Bradshaw, is that we should talk less about test automation and more about automation in test.
Sure.
When you think about it that way, I think that's a really good way to look at this, is that what we're really doing is we're taking technology, bending it to our will, and helping us to do our job. Mm-hmm. If you look at automation under that umbrella, absolutely, I do believe you can be a non-coder, a non-programmer, and still gain some value out of automation. Can you get Selenium to work for you that way? Maybe not. Depends if you're going to go the record and playback route. But could you do some of these command line tools, put them in a batch file and say that I've automated something? In my opinion, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think in talking with Richard as well, and this is not about Richard, in your background, I mean, the more you expose yourself to automation, and I don't mean that in a dirty way. I don't mean that in a salacious way, but the idea is that the more you're exposed to technology, generally you may find yourself just becoming more technical. And I've seen that even with people who started as business analysts, and now, you know, they're writing macros in Excel, they're doing a little bit of command prompt, they know what an IP address is. I mean, we're kind of over that hump as an industry. And now would you say, like, you jumped right in with automation because it was the thing of the day when you started your career. We're in 2015. You know, those people that are unfamiliar with coding, well, you'll have art history majors that can code JavaScript just because I learned it on the side in grade school.
Definitely. Definitely.
So cool. So this will be a great session. People who are either interested in getting started in automation, and maybe they're trying to figure out what guys like you do, or that they're taking the next step. Maybe they're getting out of being trapped in a test tool. Have you ever been trapped in a test tool, Paul?
Trapped in a test tool per se, from an economic standpoint, yes.
Sure.
Because you start building code, you start building business logic into some sort of technology, it becomes harder and harder to move away from that technology if that technology gets old, if it gets stale, if it gets where the company goes out of business, if you have new features in your product that the old technology can't handle. If you become too married to that product, it's very hard to get out of it. Yeah. In a previous presentation that I did at STPCon, I talk about the difference between dating your tools and marrying your tools. If you date them, you're hitting multiple tools for multiple different purposes, but you're not getting all of the benefit that if you actually really marry them and so to speak, get into bed with them, where you're dealing with them and all the in-laws, you know, all the ancillary stuff that comes along with it.
That's right.
You get some benefits there, but you are then married at that point, and it's harder to go and use other tools. So yeah, it's really about a philosophy and what's appropriate for your organization from a business and risk standpoint.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that folks can learn from your session is how to take what could be called a straightforward test automation tool and start using these other utilities and expanding it and extending it in non-traditional ways. Even if you're still with one vendor, let's say it's HP or Sosta or who knows, you can still do creative, expansive things, even if you are really, I don't want to say stuck with that tool, but you've committed to that platform.
Yes, and I've got examples where we have done just that.
Cool.
And I've got examples where we purposely diverted to a different tool because the one we were using just wasn't appropriate for the thing that we needed to get done.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have a good time in this session simply because it's a little different. It's a little refreshing over the whole, here's how you go about automating, here's some good practices, here's some misconceptions. I think there's always going to be a place, or at least for the foreseeable future, there's always going to be a place for that type of material because there are so many people that are just entering or just making changes that material is still valuable. But yeah, I think for people that have been practitioners for years, multiple products, multiple companies, that there is a place for this more advanced, different approach and different thinking type of session as well. So I'm very excited about this.
And as you know, the reputation of the STPCon conferences, it can be kind of intense, and it usually attracts people who are intermediate or fast moving people who can go to three sessions back to back, bang, bang, bang. And suddenly they're like, all right, I got a wealth of knowledge and I'm going to go back and do it. Now, there's another way that people can interact at the conference, which are these roundtables, and you're giving a roundtable also on automation so people can even take the next step deeper and have one-on-one or small group conversations. What are you excited about on this roundtable in particular?
You know, for me, from a personal and selfish standpoint, wouldn't it be nice to just have an hour to sit around where some experienced professionals talk about solutions to common or not so common automation challenges? That's really the goal for this roundtable session, because I'm not really presenting. I'm just sort of facilitating and maybe poking a question out there if the conversation dies down. Although in this particular forum, I'm not really expecting the conversation to die down.
I think were you at the one in Denver?
I was not at the one in Denver. I was at the one in New Orleans.
In New Orleans, yeah. They did a tool roundtable that really got heated. I mean, it wasn't quite as collaborative. Usually these roundtables, the way I think you've run them and I run them, they're very collaborative, and it's kind of like we invite a new question at the table. What kind of challenges are you having? Or someone will just say, I'm in this particular situation. What kinds of tools do you recommend? Or how should I construct some automation? How do I understand what my testers are asking of us to automate? And it's not just you answering the question. It's a roundtable. Literally, you'll have other people from other companies, other consultants or contractors who are also at STPCon. They'll sit at the table, and you'll get 12 answers and a good round. It truly is a round table, for sure.
Exactly, and that's absolutely my goal. If I don't speak at all, or if I speak last in any sort of the conversations, then I believe it'll have been a success. Because like you said, we really want to invite the participants to come in, bring your issues, your problems, or the solutions. Hey, I had this really pain in the behind thing that I had, and here's how we solved it. Does anybody have any ideas on how to improve that? Or is this useful to anybody? I really want it to be a bit more free form where the attendees can kind of decide the direction, but I really want to steer clear of tool specific things like how do I use tool X, or which tool is the best for mobile. You know, we can discuss those things in the hallway over drinks after, but for the session, I really want to keep it more of almost a collaborative problem solving session.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Paul, let me just throw a straight up question straight at you.
Okay.
What is the number one question that you get from other testers about automation?
A lot of questions that I get revolve around, how do you prove to management that we should pay for this?
Oh, yeah.
And there are different answers depending on what difficulty you're having with your management is. If it's really just they don't believe in it, you can start doing what I call the drug dealer approach. And that's the first one's free and the rest are going to cost you. Where you or someone enterprising on your team spends a weekend working on something or works a few off hours, put something together that's really valuable, something that's just going to take care of a particular problem.
Yeah.
But something that you know you're going to outgrow, because what happens is that, hey, look at the efficiencies we've gained, but without some additional funding, some time, some people, some whatever. We're not going to be able to keep this up. We just can't sustain this. So we're going to lose these efficiencies and these advantages if we don't invest in this some more. And I've seen that work pretty well. The other thing is people are so focused on return on investment. And sometimes return on investment is very easy to calculate. And I've got a couple of examples in my presentation as well. But a lot of times what I focus on is opportunity cost.
Sure.
Yeah, because I have to do this by hand or myself personally, I can't get to the next thing. But if we invest a little bit where we can get the computers to do what the computers are good at, then the humans can get on to the next thing that they're good at. And you reduce this opportunity cost by investing up front in some technology.
Yeah, I another way I've heard it said is in invert this as to what is it costing you to be not automated. And so much of the industry, not just in testing, but generally in programming and operations and plant floor automation. I mean, in so many parts of the world, we've automated banking and all sorts of stuff. It's more like, let's really analyze what the cost is for you to not be automated, because that will be more people, I think, can understand it. Maybe the executive guys who write the checks, that would be good.
Exactly.
Now, Paul, you're also a member with myself on the Software Testing Professionals Customer Advisory Board, Community Advisory Board. And, we love STPCon, but I'd love to hear from you, before you even joined up with the CAB or kind of started becoming a more regular contributor. What is the thing in your mind that attracted you to STPCon as a conference?
I'm not much of a traditionalist when it comes to a lot of approaches. I'm more of a pragmatist. So when I was looking at going out to start speaking and doing some things outside of the local community, I went to my my boss at the time, who's actually my current boss as well, and I talked to him a little about it. And what he suggested was that STPCon was probably a more accepting audience for my non-traditional approaches than some of the other some of the other conferences were. Not that there's anything wrong with the other conferences. It's all about what's appropriate. My stuff would not play well there, and their stuff may not play well at STPCon, just because different audiences go for different things. And sometimes we even have crossover where some of the attendees were at some of the more traditional conferences, and then they come to STPCon because they get different things there. But STP did accept my first presentation, and I went out to San Diego. So this would be my return trip out there and presented, and apparently people didn't hate me, so I was asked back the next time I put a proposal together.
There you go. And that's right. I think you're – if I think about the first time hearing out about STPCon, I didn't even – I wasn't even attending. I think I snuck in, and Scott Barber was – it was at one of the small hotels somewhere. This was years and years ago, and it was less of a, you know, kind of come to learn – the traditional way things are done, and here's yet another session on how to write a test case or what test requirements are. And it was much more like these are challenging sessions that maybe are more creative and challenge the status quo a little bit. And that really means that the participants, people like yourself and myself coming in, you need to be able to understand the ambiguity that there's no right or wrong answer. This is gray area. It may apply to you. It may not. If you like thinking that way, and sort of, hey, you know, give me five choices and I'll figure out which one is best for my company or my situation, STPCon just breathes that when you're there. And it makes sense that people are like, I love getting six points of view in a round table on test automation with Paul.
Yes, I'm very optimistic that we as an advisory board have done a good job over the last year since we got together at looking at what STPCon was doing and making some recommendations on how do we further the exact thing that you talked about there, the collaborative approach, the non-traditional approach, the more advanced view on things being appropriate, most appropriate in class as opposed to best in class kind of thing. And taking it that next step. And I've really tried to do that with the automation, because I've been the automation track chair for this particular conference. I'm very anxious to see how well it plays, because we do have a little bit of introductory material for the first timers, but also we've got some material where I kind of thought about it and said, what do people like me and Michael Hiles and Mark Tomlinson, what do they want to see? What's going to be challenging or new or interesting for us to come down, to sit down there and go, wow, I learned something. That's – I focused on that as well.
That's excellent. Paul, the last thing was the question posted on Twitter from my buddy Raph Loos, who says, Skynet, when is it going to happen?
2020.
2020. Okay, that's good. It coincides with the sliding window Y2K fix. Right.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Yeah. So it'll be good. We'll write AI code to go solve the 2020 problem, and that will give birth to Skynet.
Yes, and then our evil robot overlords will take revenge on me for saying things like "bend technology to my will."
That's right. And you know, those guys, even if they're robots, they still don't really know how to test.
Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
It's just an algorithm, you know, running in the background. Paul, thank you very much for joining STP Radio for an interview. Now, folks can obviously come and attend STPCon to hook up with you. How else can people get in touch with you and follow you?
They can follow me on LinkedIn, PaulGrizzAffi, or they can follow me on Twitter at PGrizzAffi.
PGrizzAffi, there you go. That'll be excellent. Paul, thanks again, man, and we'll see you in San Diego.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of STP Radio. As your host, it's my pleasure to bring these intriguing and engaging conversations to assist you in your quest to become a better software tester. Please be aware that this podcast is a production of the Software Test Professionals Organization and is copyrighted and protected via the Creative Commons Share with Attribution Non-Derivative Licensing. For more information, please visit www.softwaretestpro.com. On behalf of myself and the entire STP community, please share this podcast with your fellow testers and developers and managers. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us on the next episode of STP Radio.